Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Three Martini Lunch. We're in the third of six year-end editions where we hand out our highly coveted political awards. Today we've got three great new categories. We trust you all had a wonderful Christmas. And Jim, the day after Christmas, as everyone returns the things they couldn't stand to the store, we come up with three wonderful gifts that no one will ever want to return. And we start with scandal, specifically the worst scandal of 2012. Go for it.
It was a fantastic segue, Greg. there are a couple strong contenders in this category, but I'm going to go with one that doesn't lend itself quite so well to our usual joviality. It's the three facets of Benghazi. The first is the decisions in the months and weeks before the attack, when obviously many requests were made for additional security, reports the security situation in Benghazi was deteriorating. Other institutions like the Red Cross were pulling out, and the State Department denied all those requests for more security. How it was handled that night, and whether you know we did sufficient enough to respond to requests for aid, when are knowing that lives were at stake, did we mobilize everybody we could? Were we concerned about getting permission of the Libyan government? I mean, we're still looking for a full accounting on that. And then finally, the false explanation fed to the American people. Clearly, this had some consequences for Susan Rice. I think Benghazi, top to bottom, from beginning to end, ranks as the worst scandal of 2012.
I completely agree. I couldn't even think of other nominees that came as close, given the significance of it. No matter what other scandal you look at, unless you want to go with Fast and Furious, which I think one of us picked last year, we're talking about dead Americans here, Americans sworn to protect this country, and then this country, it seems like, wasn't there for them in all the different ways that you mentioned. The way that the media covered up for the president, for the most part, obviously folks like Brett Baer and Catherine Herridge were all over this story, as well as some print reporters, but for the most part, the administration was successfully able to run out the clock on this thing politically, which is an absolute disgrace, and the media was perfectly complicit in this. And so we'll see if more and more answers come out. We just found out not that long ago from Congressman Chaffetz that the State Department is keeping members of Congress from even talking to the survivors of the Benghazi attack to get their sides of the story. And so the cover-up continues, and it's just a disgraceful way that this administration handled this, all to be able to continue to claim that al-Qaeda was on the run. And that's just pathetic all the way around. So Benghazi, I think, the easy winner here. So let's move on to a little bit of lighter fare, the best and worst political theater, our next couple of martinis. Jim, the best political theater of 2012.
Sure. It's funny. This one, you know, kind of easily forgotten, but I think probably the single best bit of political theater, theatricality, came around the middle of the year during Mitt Romney's press conference outside the Solyndra building. He basically, the folks on the Romney campaign press bus were not told where they were going until it was en route to the location. It was never advised publicly when and where Romney's going to appear. This was basically believed that they thought the Obama administration would try to do something to disrupt it or prevent it. And once he was there, he said this is not a symbol of success, but of failure. They pointed out that Obama had spoken there and said this is a sign of the economy of the future, et cetera, a symbol of a serious conflict of interest. Obviously, 2012 was a year in which things did not turn out the way we wanted to, Greg. But I remember this moment looking at this and saying, ooh, this is a Romney campaign that can be nimble on its feet, really figure out good, you know, ways to have great visuals with the arguments they want to make. And unfortunately, they didn't follow up on it with that same tone of aggressiveness and sharpness and I guess you could say creativity. It was probably one of the better moments for the Romney campaign, and I kind of wish they'd followed up on it, but it stands out as kind of the way women candidates should, you know, figure out ways to add a little bit of drama to what their rather routine campaign arguments.
And mine's also from the campaign, not that one specifically. Runner-up, any primary debate featuring Newt Gingrich going after a member of the media, whether it be John King about allegations of Newt Gingrich wanting an open marriage, or going after Juan Williams about food stamps and that sort of thing. Don't know that it necessarily helped Gingrich or the party, but it probably helped him in South Carolina and got him a lot of attention. But my nominee for Best Political Theater is the first general election presidential debate. Mitt Romney was on fire. Barack Obama was a little bit off his game, thinking he could just sleepwalk through the debates and coast to re-election. Ultimately, he did win re-election, but Romney made the strongest case that I think we saw throughout the 2012 campaign. He was sharp in attacking the president's record, pretty clear on explaining how his administration, if elected, would be different. And ultimately, Romney unfortunately adopted some of the Obama tactics from that night and tried to then run out the clock on the later debates, and so I think that hurt him. But that night in Denver was the shiniest moment, I think, for the Romney campaign, and unfortunately it just wasn't enough.
Undoubtedly the pinnacle, yeah. And it's, you know, I thought it was kind of useful was that obviously it was a night in which Obama was not at the top of his game, and I think we can, you know, conclude that Romney was at the top of his game. What was interesting was, you know, a lot of people didn't, you know, a lot of folks who were upset about the outcome blamed it on Lehrer. And I thought Lehrer, moderator Jim Lehrer, did a fantastic job kind of letting the candidates talk and realize that he's not supposed to be the show. And it's not supposed to be about him interjecting and cutting off. You know, let the candidates go over a little bit just to talk. Let them, you know, the spotlight is meant to be on the candidates and to help draw contrast between them. And I think that is one of the reasons it was such a good debate, both for Mitt Romney, and I think, you know, had enormous attention because it was actually a good debate between the two sides for once.
Absolutely. All right. Worst political theater. Funny, Jim, I had more nominees for this one than the best political theater, but what did you come up with?
I think it's time for the town hall debate format to be retired. not just because people felt this one did not go particularly well for Mitt Romney. I think, you know, you look at even in Senate races, in any whenever you see this format, presidential primaries, the questions are almost always bad. You know, the questioners freeze under the lights, and the questions are always some variation of, well, what can you do for me? And, you know, the undecided voters, we can always – are never undecided. And this, you know, this goes both ways because there was the one questioner who asked Obama this year about Stephen Chu saying his job was not to bring down gas prices. Now, it made for a great question that Obama, of course, didn't answer. He filibustered and talked about other aspects of energy policy. But, you know, Greg, there's no way that guy is totally undecided on who he's voting for, okay? I think that had been discussed on Rush Limbaugh. I think Drudge had – I mean, come on, you know. And, of course, then you had the woman who asked about equal pay and Lilly Ledbetter. I mean, if you're citing Lilly Ledbetter, you're not an undecided voter, okay? And maybe that's a problem is the – you know, undecided voter has become a synonym for thoroughly uninformed voter, and thus anybody who's informed starts developing opinions on it, and they clearly have, you know, decide one way or the other. So look, as much as we hate the moderators, I can't stand the generic allegedly undecided voters who managed to draw the lottery ticket and get to be in the audiences for this one. The only good news with Ponytail Guy did not make his return about you know, the president is the national father figure and how will we get the family to get along and all that kind of nonsense. So, you know, I'm ready to say that's time to get rid of it. Even by the standards of this, you know, awful theatrical emoticon format, this year's was really bad. And it's time to put it up on the shelf.
Yeah, absolutely agree. It's a reckless format. The candidates never answer the questions. Even Mitt Romney didn't answer the Stephen Chu question, which was incredible. I had three nominees here. One is President Obama pretending that he had to be hands-on for Hurricane Sandy. That unfortunately seemed to work out well for him. The one that I probably should make the nominee, but we've already talked about it in the worst scandal, is this whole effort by the administration to blame the video from Hillary Clinton and her speeches, the president, Susan Rice, obviously, and all the way down the line. But worst political theater for me, Sandra Fluke, bringing herself before this special Democratic committee, tearing up that she apparently can't afford birth control, which runs as low as about $10 a month. Then she became this national poster child, a very nauseating speech at a convention that in large part glorified abortion and obviously helped to divide America, which was the Obama administration's goal on reproductive issues as it related to the healthcare mandate on contraception as well. And it was just a nasty aspect all the way around, and the sooner Sandra Fluke goes away, the better.
You know, I'm going to make one quick observation about Sandra Fluke. That apparently she, you know, makes her appearance in, you know, before Congress, ends up speaking at the Democratic convention, gets turned into this cause célèbre, you know, this cause that everybody who's on the left must celebrate as a the noble crusade of our time to spare this Georgetown law student of the extraordinary expense of birth control. One of the ways you get rewarded for doing the right thing in Washington is you get a glowing profile in the Washington Post style section. Patrick Kennedy's got it. I think they're working on one on Patrick Moran. the son of Jim Moran. You know, all the good folks get their glowing profiles. They did one on Sandra Fluke and, you know, didn't mention that she had a total of 12 people show up to see her speak in Nevada or something. But deep in the column, it was Mo Lane had noticed this. She was paying out of her own pocket to do all these events. And she heard anything about you. You want to talk about somebody taking advantage of Sandra Fluke. You know, we talk about the lack of chivalry and where's some gentleman to take care of her. Well, really, Sandra, you and I don't see eye to eye in a lot of things. But let me just observe. If you're going to go out, make them pay. Okay, don't do any of this stuff. Don't give it away for free, I guess you could say. Although some people will think that's in a different context, which is like, you know, it's kind of ironic about this idea of, you know, Sandra Fluke was repressed and abused and exploited. And then here's these political figures on the other side of the aisle, like much more explicitly exploiting her, making her pay for herself to come and go to the rallies and do stuff for her or something. I mean, you know, I mean, you could say that shows how committed she is to the causes, or you could say, boy, there are a lot of absolute cheapskate candidates on the Democratic side, or alternatively, they think she's gullible and that she'll do these sorts of things for herself. So one unremarked aspect of the Sandra Fluke phenomenon that kind of struck me as just how you talk about war on women. How about a little bit of help in the fight on the war on Sandra Fluke's expenses, Democrats? Okay, you know what it is? I got it. Oh, Greg, it all makes sense now. It's one thing to give her birth control because you're spending taxpayers' money. But the campaign money that is used by these candidates, that's their money. It's not for sharing. It's not supposed to be spent on, you know, Sandra Fluke, what's she done? You know, that's what taxpayer money is for. So Sandra, I think you got a little taken advantage of, and I hope that next cycle you at the very least, you make them pick up the tab for some of these things.
If Sandra Fluke is still prominent in the 2016 cycle, it's going to be a long 4 years. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. Happy holidays.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Join us again tomorrow for the next installment of our year-end awards on the 3 Martini Lunch.